You're listening to 101.5 FM on UMFM. I'm your host, Ryan Funk, and welcome to UTalk. On today's episode, I feel the theme today is learning about those behind the scenes. We have two interviews today, one with Dr. Edsel Martinez. He's a local pediatrician, and I thought it was important to learn more about the man behind the white coat and stethoscope. We'll also connect with someone from U Multicultural. We're taking an opportunity to learn about all of our members and let the community know who we all are. And our first guest for that is Zuhair Al-Musre. Let's get into it.
I'm a general pediatrician here in the city of Winnipeg. And yeah, we see babies, kids, teenagers in the office for pediatric care. In terms of what I like to do in my free time, I'm obsessed with Ultimate Frisbee. Mm-hmm. I've been playing since I was, in my 20s or something like that.
Awesome.
And now I'm on a 40, I'm an old Ultimate player, but there's a team for 40 and up. Mm-hmm. It's called Grand Masters of the Universe, which is a play on, of course, the He-Man.
Yeah, of course, of course. Did you end up watching the new He-Man that came out on Netflix?
Kevin Smith's He-Man? No, do you know, I never saw it. I saw clips of it. I thought I would check it out, but I haven't had time. I have young kids and stuff.
Yeah.
I did watch the new Transformers, though. I don't know if you saw that.
It's a movie or is it the show?
It's a show, and okay. It's fantastic.
Okay, I think I've seen things on it. It's so hard nowadays because, like, there's so many shows thrown your way, left, right, and so center. Much. I know my partner and I, we've been enjoying going through Game of Thrones. This is our first time ever watching it, so it's a really exciting time. She's really invested in it. She's a little worried because she knows that it gets bad. So she's like, oh, no, when's that moment?
What season are you on?
So we just made it onto season 2 right now.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's going to get real.
It's been fun going back and watching it. It really makes sense why it captivated so many people at the time.
It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my wife and I have watched it, and we watched the first season of the new one, mm-hmm. The House of the Dragon, and that's really good, too.
Yeah, we'll be hopping into that after we finish this all up.
It's fantastic. I recommend it 100%. And the books, if you haven't read the books, I recommend that as well. We're huge fantasy fan.
What did you think of the Rings of Power?
Do you know, I haven't seen that.
Okay.
But I love Tolkien and I mm-hmm. love Lord of the Rings and the movies and The Hobbit. But I haven't seen The Ring of Power yet.
I mean, Rings of Power.
What did you think?
It was like good, but how to describe it? It had this weird almost like veneer over all the visuals and everything where it just felt a little weird at times. Like, it didn't feel real, almost dreamlike in certain moments. And I mean, the story was very hit or miss, but I guess when they're going through those elements of the story, there's just so much that they're trying to cram in to just a couple seasons, like thousands of years of history.
Well, I definitely want to check it out.
Even if a product or like a show or movie is bad, there's something you can get out of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I really hated the new Jurassic World movie, like Jurassic World Dominion.
Yeah.
It was awful. But at the same time, it's like, why is it bad? Like, what are the elements that I feel are horrible?
Yes.
But then you can dissect and be like, okay, well, how could it have been a good movie sort of thing? And I love movies, and I mean, I'm gathering the same thing from you,
Movies and shows. We always have a TV show going or a movie that we're, want to watch and things like that. That's the ultimate frisbee, and then movies, and then we read too. All fantasy stuff.
Well, fantasy is just so much fun. Is that something that you've been in or enjoyed forever?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if I think back, so when I was in my 20s, I was reading Harry Potter, and I loved it. Like, mm-hmm. I loved it like a child loves, something like that. I was a huge Star Wars mm-hmm. fan growing up. And in fact, I think I'm a bigger fan now than maybe even when I was young. My son and daughter love it. And
isn't it fun when you get to relive an experience with a loved one?
It's amazing. I would actually say that's one of the best things about parenting is reliving something and seeing it new almost again. So we watched episode 4, which is the original Star Wars.
A New Hope.
Yeah, New Hope. And my son was, this is a few years ago, was mm-hmm. sitting and it's like at the edge of his seat and it's blowing his mind. He's never seen anything like this. Mm-hmm. And then when they blow up the Death Star right at the end, he's just like, they blew it up.
He's just in it.
I'm tearing up because I'm experiencing this movie that I've seen I don't know how many times. I'm reliving it. I'm like, it's like I'm watching it for the first time again because I'm watching it through him reacting to the movie. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely brilliant.
That's awesome. I know how I have this conversation all the time with friends. It's like, what sort of media would you want to watch again for the first time? So I'll throw that question at you. What would you like to, like, you've basically had that memory erased from you and you get to experience something again for the first time?
In terms of like movie?
Movie, television, books, video games.
Oh man, that's a good question. I mean, I think watching Star Wars again was brilliant. And the other thing, when, I don't know if you remember this, when the remastered, so this is like, I don't know when, 90-something or yeah. something. I hadn't seen those movies for years because I was like late teenager, so I hadn't seen them. Mm-hmm. So when I watched them, it was almost like I was watching them again
yeah.
for the first time. And then watching them with my son, it was like watching them again. I don't know. I mean, I've loved so many of the things that we've talked about. The Harry Potter books were incredible. The movies were fantastic. Lord of the Rings blew my mind when I read it as a late teenager. Mm-hmm. Game of Thrones books, I don't know if you read them, but they are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, I would say, better than the show. I mean, and that's saying something because the show is, mm-hmm. at least the first six seasons, are amazing.
Yeah.
Because the show goes so fast, right? Like this,
yeah.
this house it's and this other person, their knight. And when you read it, you can go back and keep it more mm-hmm. straight. So there's so much more in the books. If you're loving the show, you should read the books because they're fantastic as well.
Mm-hmm. I'd probably want to watch Breaking Bad again for the first yes. time. That was just such good drama.
Amazing. It was.
It was just such an interesting story. The characters, the way they get into them, how real they feel, and just how they portray this everyday, almost average teacher
yeah.
that you slowly find out, well, he's actually like this crazy chemist genius.
Yeah.
And how, like, he seems to have a heart of gold, and then just slowly through power and everything, he slowly fell into madness and corruption.
Yes. Yeah, that was fantastic, actually, as well.
Such a fun time.
Oh, it was incredible.
I love movies. We could talk about movies all day.
Yeah.
But coming back to like pediatrics and everything,
yeah.
how'd you get into becoming a doctor? What was that path like? I know for myself and probably many others, do I want to get into some sort of medical field? Mm-hmm. And then you take a biology class and you're like, no, that's not going to be the, the path for me.
Well, when I was young, I wanted to be... My dad's in business, so I thought, okay, I'll just go into business. But mm-hmm. I think it was kind of like a reflexive thing. And I held on to that for years and years and years, and I was in high school. But I was always good at science and math. I just got a facility for it, just kind of drawn to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read this book by Scott Peck. It's called People of the Lie.
Okay.
And he also wrote a book called The Road Less Traveled, which I think is a little bit more famous with life mm-hmm. advice and things like that. So he's a pediatric psychiatrist.
Okay.
So the stories are all these stories about him meeting a kid or a teenager and how he helped them through depression or anxiety or what they were going through. And then when I read it, it just blew my mind because... I was always also really drawn to kids. So I was, yeah. you know, I was a camp counselor for, you know, mm-hmm. 8 summers in a row. And part of me was like, should I be a teacher? That was the other thing. That was because mm-hmm. I'm so drawn to kids. And I found that they were drawn to me and I could understand them. And I liked all kids, like even, you know, like the...
Even the
moody
ones. The ones where you're
yeah.
like, ugh,
yeah.
this and, kid again.
yeah, and I found that, you know, if you bond with them, even kids that were, you know, quote unquote, you know, bad kids, you know, they're just trying to communicate. They're just trying to find acceptance and yeah. somebody who will pay attention to them and all these things. And if you could figure that out, it was so rewarding, right? To have somebody who was having a really hard time all of a sudden kind of turn around a bit and just with a little bit of acceptance and understanding and love, you know, that's all that they needed. But
mm-hmm.
so when I read this book, it just, I'm like...
All the pieces came together.
All the pieces came together. I'm like, that is how I do what I do at camp, but I can actually do that in real life. So at that moment, I was in grade 12.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, how do I become a psychiatrist? Oh, you have to be a doctor. Okay. And that was the first time that it had ever actually entered my mind.
Wow.
Whether, you know, be a doctor or not. So then you have to be, okay, I have to be a doctor. What do I have to do? And then that's initially how I went into sciences at U of M and pursuing my dream to be a doctor. And then I kind of went from pediatric psychiatry just to pediatrics over time. Just I found it was just it matched my personality, mm-hmm. And I wanted to see. I became more interested in the science aspect of it and the physiology aspect of it, yeah. Which kind of then pediatrics in general kind of felt like a better fit.
Isn't it just amazing these butterfly effect moments that yeah. is just one little thing? You read a book and it puts you on this whole path to where you are today. No. I used to not give credence too much to like the butterfly effect, like, oh, how can this one moment affect so many different people?
Yeah.
But I can't remember I won't even try explaining it because I don't remember it anywhere. But there's something about just the twin towers. And then now I'm explaining it. Let me just stop. But it's just amazing these moments, how one little event can completely change your life.
That was the other thing in pediatrics, you know, like I read that, you know, when I was trying to decide, you know, one good teacher could change mm-hmm. your trajectory. And I thought, you know, could I do that too, right? To a child or a teenager, listen to mm-hmm. someone. A lot of pediatrics is not just medicine, right? Or medicine in the traditional sense of here's your antibiotic. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it is psychology, right?
Yeah.
Listening, being empathic, reaffirming, reframing. And those were things that initially I didn't know I was going to be doing in the office. And not just with the patient, but also with the parent, you know, like empowering the parent, empowering the mom.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. It's okay if you're depressed. You know, it's okay if you don't want to do this every day. It's okay if it's hard. And I didn't know that I was going to have to do that. And I found it increasingly rewarding.
Yeah. Well, for a kid who's like dealing with something, just that an adult just acknowledging that mm-hmm. maybe they're struggling can do so much.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And that's part of my job is that empowering kids and adolescents and parents and reassuring and reaffirming. Yeah, and it's great.
I'm also guessing, like, you love being a dad. Just from the conversation, you love working with kids and, you know, reliving those experiences with your son and everything.
Yes.
So, like, being a parent's probably, like, an amazing dream come true as well.
It's amazing. It's hard. I don't know if you're a parent or not yet, but but it's amazing, right? It's so hard, and then it's so
yeah.
satisfying. At the same time, and not always the same day. But,
well, I know some of the experiences my parents had with me. So there's some days they're probably like, yes, I love having kids. And there are other days they're like, why? I should have never made this decision.
Yeah. And you know what? And that's normal. And then that's what I tell people in the office, you know, it's okay if it's hard. It's okay if you don't want to do this every day because it is hard. But on the whole, when you take it all, mm-hmm. you know, I wouldn't choose any
yeah.
other way, right?
Well, you're helping shape a future adult, right? You're
yes.
helping give guidance, give instruction on who they're going to become. And those lessons they will then share with the next generation as
yes.
well.
Yeah, it's powerful stuff.
If you weren't a doctor,
mm-hmm.
is there anything else that you would want to be?
Well, I mean, I thought about, you know, I thought about teaching. I think teaching
yeah.
would be amazing. If you paid me, I mean, I would do camp. I would be a camp counselor for life. I just loved it. I loved it. I got to do a little bit. I went to diabetes camp as a mm-hmm. As a resident, and I got to do a little bit of diabetes with the kids. And then still be at camp. If I could do
yeah.
that job every day, because that's just 1 week once a year. But if I could do that job and have, you know, sort of like medical at camp and still do camp,
yeah,
that would be amazing.
Thank you, Dr. Martinez, for taking the time to chat with me. Always a pleasure. And it was great to just, you know, connect a little bit, learn a little bit about yourself
you.
And your interests.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's so fun.
on this hilltop made of solid wood, but broken thoughts today and every day. You and I in scenery left lived amid the greenery today and every day. My soul is tied to this place. I know. Who knows what the future holds? Make your plans, but enjoy today. And every day, mountains and valleys fall from beneath my four walls today. My soul.
So, Zuhair, welcome here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Ryan, for your invitation.
Yeah. You're in the middle of Ramadan right now, so why don't you tell me a little bit about that? What does it all encompass?
So, Ramadan, it's a month in the Hijri calendar, not the in our calendar. Mm-hmm. It calls a month of Ramadan. So all the Muslim in the world start fasting from the sun raised to sunset. And we are not allowing to drink or eat. So not like the other religions. Maybe mm-hmm. they can drink waters or eat some food without like meat. So it's different. So we stop eating a month. All the family members gather to break their fasting together. That's maybe it's the biggest challenge for the Muslims outside of their home country, especially here in Canada.
Yeah, because you have no one else that's really exactly. participating in it.
Yeah, it's every day for 30 days, like a Thanksgiving dinner, for example. So we try to have like salads, different like main dishes and sweets.
Yeah, to break the fast at the end of the day.
Exactly. It's like a celebration in the end of the day. And
like
after,
we did it. We made it.
Yeah. And after 30 days, we celebrate our Eid al-Fitr.
Okay.
So it's a celebration for all Muslims. They celebrate the Ramadan with 3 days. It's similar to the Christmas in Christian. And this is the first celebration for Muslim people. It will be after Ramadan.
Why do Islamic faiths participate in Ramadan? What is kind of like the purpose? What is the reasoning, but kind of the religious significance around it?
Yeah, exactly. So in this month, we feel the very nice meaning from our soul. We try to feel how the poor people feel when they are hungry. We have money and we have the food, but we not eat it, just to show the poor people we are in mm-hmm. the same field. Like we try also to be very generous in this month. So we try to make charities, donations. We give food and money for the people who need it. This is like our manners in the whole year, but we try to make it more in Ramadan. And the other side from this one, we have like a health benefit from the fasting. The science proof that this fasting every year, it makes our bodies, it's more healthier. So there is two benefits, not just in like for religion and our soul, it's also for our health. It makes us more stronger and more creative, for example, because like most of the achievement in our history, it was happening in Ramadan. So the scientists think like how these people, they have energy and they are not having any food or drink. So we have Muslim players who play in very high level in Europa League and in NBA, they're playing and they have a very high scores in the basketball, and they are fasting. Everyone have like a question mark over their heads, like how come they are without any source of energy? So this is who we are, and we don't feel like we are not eating or that
something
challenging.
Well, I mean, it's not like you're just completely cutting out food for like the entire month. It's just during
exactly.
the day. So I guess it's sort of a sense of camaraderie, understanding of mm-hmm. those less fortunate and less privileged, as well as a unification with family and community in those evening times when mm-hmm. you are yeah. celebrating and eating those meals together once the sun has gone down.
Yeah, exactly. And this year, my daughter, she's just 9 years old mm-hmm. in grade 3, and she said, like, Dad, I want to start fasting this year. So I told her, no, it's hard for you. You go to school, you see your friends, like, or classmates, they have their food in the lunch break, so you don't have it. You still, your body's still weak for this. It's, I don't believe you can do it. I just want to make it easier on her. Like, she's small and she can't take that decision and this responsibility, you know. And she said, let me try just one day. I promise if I feel hungry, I will stop for the next day. And that's amazing. Now she complete like 11-day fasting and she's all the day become better than the day before. And she's very excited. And I will make for her something special this when in the end of this month. Like a very special gift because, you know, I don't encourage her to do it. She just take that decision and she like it. She make it easier on me as in my religion to explain for her when she become ready for it and she should do it. She make it easier on me. Like she did it but just by herself. So it's like something, a feeling you can describe it. You just feel it, how much you feel like happy for her.
Almost like a sense of euphoria, seeing your daughter taking on this massive task, essentially.
Exactly, yeah. And she's excited and she prepared her dish when we are start to break our fast. She took every small, like fruit, like her dish looks amazing with juicy and everything. Yeah, that's a good feeling for me.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been in Canada now?
Now, like a 3.5 years, almost like close to 4 years.
Why did you want to move to Canada in the first place?
So I am originally from Syria, and I raised in Dubai. When I moved to Dubai when I was 2 years old. So the rules and the laws in Dubai, they didn't give a permanent resident or like a citizenship. And I have two daughters. I was working in very good position in Dubai and in very good lifestyle, if I say it correctly. I tried to travel to Austria with my family, just like a tourist for 10 days. Mm-hmm. And they said, we are not accepted. And they say, why? They said, because you are Syrian and we think if you go there, you will not go back to Dubai. I say, what evidence do you want? They said, like a bank statement, a good bank statement, and booking for the hotels and booking for airplane, like for flight going back. I say, okay, that's fair. I have everything. And they say, you're still not eligible. I say, okay, why? They said, because you are like a Syrian and most of the Syrian people, they are looking for refugees. You in Dubai and you have money and you can buy these things. I know it's worth to spend this money now. Even if you lost it, you don't care because you will have to apply like a refugee statement there.
So and there was a little bit of cultural and discrimination going on.
Yeah, just because I'm holding a Syrian passport, like I'm like not allowing to visit any country in the world, you know, like just like a few countries. And then I said like I should have something else. We try to nominate which countries we can move. Like we said, like maybe USA, Canada, or Australia. We try to find for us way for one of these countries. And
kind of a pros and cons list sort of thing.
Exactly. So my friends and my lawyer advised me with Canada, and he said, like, we can apply for you as a refugee, even if you are not in camps in Jordan or Lebanon or Turkey. I say, okay,
Since you didn't have a permanent residence at the time.
Exactly, because the Canadian government believed that every Syrian people in the world, if they don't have
Well, you're access, kind of an extended foreign worker at the time in Dubai.
Exactly, because you don't know what's happening. If you lose your job, you don't have enough time to find another job, and
security,
you have to go.
There's none of the benefits that apply to you as because you didn't have a citizenship.
Exactly, and you have to go to Syria, and now Syria, it's not safe. We said, like, okay, let's do something different. So we moved to Canada after, like, 3 years of applying. Like, we apply in 2016 or 15, and we travel in 2019. It was like a very long process, and we was working, and we don't like think it's like a something like a wasting our time. We're still working. We are good. If we get it, that will be fine. But the only challenge what we face since we arrived here that we don't have enough information about Canada. The old resource what I had like looking on it before, the Canadian website, but when you translate the English to Arabic, it sometimes not makes sense. You understand like the word maybe literally, but you can't have enough ideas.
Well, it's not within context. When you translate things, different grammar rules, different sentence structure, sometimes it just turns into a complete mess.
And also in the YouTube, you don't have like enough information about the cities and...
Mm-hmm. Like, something we've been learning from a lot of immigrants about some of the shortcomings in terms of the information available to them.
Yeah. And when you first came, I thought I have good English to communicate with Canadian. And I find my English, it was even not slang language. Mm-hmm. Like even not the language what we use it in the street. So it's very far away from what I know. So my neighbors say for me, "Hi there." And I looking around, who's there? Are you talking to me or someone there? And he feel like I'm like a deaf person or something wrong happened to me. And I say, I'm just say hi. I say, yeah, hi. And I try to correct my previous English. And I start from the scratch with my English. I took too many classes in Red River College to build my English. And I watch a lot of TV show, Friends, for example, mm-hmm. Alf. I just want to understand what they are saying. Like, sometimes I'm using the Arabic subtitles just to understand what they mean. So my biggest challenge now on my English, if you said to me like a joke and you don't smile after that, I don't know if that joke or not. Like, I have to understand the body language, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So this is maybe my next goal in English, to have...
Try to understand the little subtleties of
certain
things.
Yeah, and when someone compliments you, for example, like, "Yo, Zuhair, you did a great job."
Mm-hmm.
I don't have another response, just like, "Thank you." In Arabic, I have like 1,000 of response about any compliment, or if you feel sad, how I can... tell you, like, in the death or funeral, what I feel. Like, my heart, it's broken about your loss, but I don't know how to say it.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes so in our religion, we say, if you said, for example, told me, like, my dad passed away.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, first of all, I would say, thanks God. Because we believe he goes back to his creator.
But in that context, when you say thank God to someone in there, that sounds like, wait, you're glad my dad is?
Yeah, it's like something maybe like...
Because usually in English, the term thank God is kind of like a...
relief, thank goodness, something that's over. Happened. It's over. Like it's I'm something overwhelming done. Me. So this is like a very big...
Very different cultural context.
Exactly.
Now that you've been here for 3 years, what are some other things? So you've... Some of the challenges are like colloquialisms and different sayings and things in terms of conversational English. Or right now with Ramadan, you know, there's not too many people that are going through it at the same time. Of course, there's the Islamic community here in Winnipeg, but it's not like the general population is partaking in it. What are some of those other, I guess, culture shock moments that you've gone through?
So first of all, like many of us, we have to be working very hard to be survived. So based in our shifts, sometimes we have work during the fasting, after breaking our fast. So we break our fast here at 8 p.m. So for example, if someone who works as a security and he's Muslim and his shift starts from 5 to 12, like a.m. So this period he needs... this time because he's already exhausted from the fasting
the night before.
So he need to be having not just like a lunch break, because he should pray after that.
Mm-hmm.
We have like a special prayer, it calls Taraweeh, after our normal pray. So he need like some time to read our holy book. For this person, it's very challenging, especially if that person a woman. So, you know, women should prepare the food for the family, be with their kids. So this kind of challenge.
So that's one of the cultural expectations?
Exactly.
Or like one of the, I guess, gender roles within an Islamic household, that generally the woman would be the one preparing food and stuff like that?
Yeah, normally this is how it works. If the man can do that, it's no problem with that. I make salad every day.
Yeah.
I make the salad and the fruit. So, but usually in our culture, the woman, she is the queen of the house. Mm-hmm. The man go and work very hard outside to support his wife and his kids.
Mm-hmm.
So
sort of traditional gender roles within the household, exactly, that people think about.
We didn't require our women to work.
Mm-hmm.
That's only just volunteer from her if she want. And if don't, I'm as a Muslim man, I responsible to support my wife.
Mm-hmm.
I have to work very hard to support her, to pay her rent, food, clothes, everything.
Yeah. Those sort of kind of traditional practices were done out here in the West for a very long period of time. Mm-hmm. It's only because of socioeconomical changes that things started changing, as well as like the women's rights movement wanting to work.
Yeah, here the wages in Canada, sometimes I can't say it's enough for the whole family.
Well, that's the whole conversation right now, like with minimum wage and stuff. No one can actually care for their households.
So now we
feel
like... So
you need to have multiple income families.
Exactly. We need our our wife to support us with like a second income. So, and we also... We get like a child support, child tax benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So all this just helping us to survive. I don't know if we can say something like that, because here the women's and men's, they are equal in the Canadian government.
I guess in the conversation in terms of like traditional values versus breaking apart gender norms sort of thing, we need to have a system in place and resources that allow for someone who wants to stay at home, right? If someone wants to stay at home and care for their family, that should be an option available. And that's a great thing to do in life, raising a family, caring for your kids. Yeah. But at the same time, if someone wants to work, it's great to have both options available.
Yeah, exactly. We would like to feel like we can support our family. For me as a man, I would like to have like a good income that helps me to not put any pressure on my wife to go and work. Because, you know, sometimes the ladies will become too much emotionally. They have something in their bodies physically every month make her down. And
well, so, in terms of the menstruation and stuff like that, it can
exactly
be a great challenge for some people. Yeah. Terrible cramps and everything, and it can be. And I mean, that's a conversation that we're talking about in terms of like feminism and women's rights and stuff, having feminine hygiene products available, funded for by our federal governments and provincial governments, as well as just being able to
and
take time off if need be, if they are working.
And other things I would like to highlight it, Ryan, like if I have a baby who's like just a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I know in Canada, there is like a maternity leave for 1 year.
Yes.
And after that, we should put that baby in childcare. I don't have any problem with childcare, but who will take care more about this kid more than his mom?
Well, yeah, that's the continued conversation around providing.
Especially we face a big challenge in the Corona pandemic when all the kids was in this
at home, there was no childcare available.
So if we need to raise a good kids for our future Canadian, you know, if they get enough time with their mom at least, and their dad can go and work. I know that's something, maybe it's not exactly how it works here in Canada, because every family has different.
For double income families, sometimes they have no one to watch their kids if they don't have any relatives or things to watch them. But that is a conversation that is happening about continuing to help the workers here in Canada, about extending maternity and especially paternity leave if a father wants to be there for their family or for same-sex couples who adopt children. In my opinion, it's all about having those options available for how people want to live their lives. Mm-hmm. And we need to have systems in place in order to support them through those.
Based on my experience as a TV journalist here in New Multiculture, I met a lot of organizations who work with youth and children. And when I asked them, what's the most challenge our kids face today? They said, their mental health. There is a lot of issue in that area. So that, you know, it's very, like, touching me deeply, like, why that will, that kids who's just like a 5 years old or seven or even if like a 12 in the school, he feel like he's not normal like his friends. We need just to have enough time with the family. Not give
to build those emotional and physical connections with
we will avoid a lot of things when we have enough time. I don't have to work like two jobs as a father to support the family, and my wife have to work too to pay very high amount for rent or mortgage or even the grocery, it's too expensive. So we have to work very, very hard. And in the other side, we leave our kids, we leave our family, and we are outside most of the time. I think we are lucky, and the coronavirus give us a very good opportunity to work from home. So that was like a positive thing. We watch our kids when we are working, but that will not be forever. We have to go back now to our offices and back to normal, but still we feel like our kids will they be like for a long time alone. Who's teaching them? My phone, the screen, the TV, and many times when they are watching this or playing these video games, in the middle there is a commercial for any product. Sometimes this is not appropriate for the kids to see. Mm-hmm. And they let our kids sometimes try this game, which one not for their age. So you give...
Well, that's the biggest struggle right now, where parents are completely busy. They're not paying attention to what their kids... They just give their kids the iPad, and they're not paying attention to what they're watching or things. And that's a whole conversation that we're seeing in terms of... this is a long topic I could go on, but just generally, you got to watch what your kids are watching because it's all too easy for them to fall down very specific rabbit holes that can lead them in bad directions.
Yeah.
In terms of individuals like Andrew Tate or Sneeko, Aiden Ross, these are all individuals as part of the manosphere. Mm-hmm. So incredibly toxic mindsets, incredibly toxic sort of things that they're teaching kids. Mm-hmm. And if you're not paying attention, your kid's going to all too easily fall down there and consume that. And I guess for like immigrant parents who don't speak English, their kids might be watching it and they don't even know what's happening. Watching.
Yeah, exactly. And this has happened a lot in our Arabic community. Most of the parents told me like our kids now, they are fluent in English. They speak with each other in home in English, and we don't understand what they are saying.
Yeah.
So this is just like a very huge challenge for the parents when they are raised their kids here in Canada. Mm-hmm. So now the parents in age, like it's not easy for them to learn a new language. And also they are struggling with the life expenses. They have to work any work, transition job, just to support the family. So these kids, basically, they don't have their family to support.
At U Multicultural, you were hired on as our civic journalist. Can you let the audience know what exactly that is?
So civic journalist, he's a person who highlight all the challenge for communities here in Winnipeg or in anywhere, but I work here in Winnipeg. My my role to follow up with all the communities here in Winnipeg and what they are struggle and how we can make their life better. So every time I go to the events and I ask them about what they are like facing here in Winnipeg and how we can make their life better. So this is my role as a civic journalist. So I try very very hard to make their voices more louder and everyone knows like their pain. So normally what happens if this small community, they have an event, they send for the media organization here in Winnipeg to come and cover. Even if they show up, they don't have like a huge space in their news to meet everyone and to talk specifically what was there. So it will be like just a very quick, short news for like a 30 second or max 1 minute. Mm-hmm. Or a short report for 2 minutes. And that's not fair for our Winnipeggers. So I go to them or invite them to my studio and I just open it for them to speak, explain themselves. And this is what I found that fair. We have a platform for them. So this is what I'm doing right now.
Hey, have any stories you'd like us to share? Communities we should highlight? Make sure you reach out to U Multicultural. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk. And have yourself a good one.